Welcome to the Nation Magazine Podcasts. You're listening to Nation Conversations, exclusive audio of Nation forums, events, seminars, and salons.
I'm Betsy Reed, executive editor of The Nation, and I'm here with Anna LePay, who has worked with us on a new issue of the magazine, a special issue on the food movement. Anna is the founder of the Small Planet Institute and the author, most recently, of Diet for a Hot Planet, The Climate Crisis at the End of Your Fork and What You Can Do About It. She has a piece in the issue, which is an interview with the UN's Olivier De Schutter, who is the special rapporteur on the right to food. And she served as a consulting guest editor on the entire issue. The issue actually opens with a piece by Anna's mother, Frances Moore LePay, on the 40th anniversary of the publication of her book, Diet for a Small Planet. And she sort of lays out what has been achieved and what some of the remaining obstacles are for the global food movement. So Anna, why don't you talk a little bit about that and the forum that follows your mother's provocative piece?
Sure, and thanks, Betsy, for having me on. And I think this issue brought together a lot of great voices. And essentially what my mother was trying to do in her piece is to really ask, it's been 40 years since she wrote Diet for a Small Planet, sort of looking back over 40 years of the food movement, where have we been? Where are we going? Are things getting better? Are things getting worse? And what she argues in the piece is that it's both and, you know, that both in many ways the corporate control over our food system has only gotten more concentrated and more extreme. On the other hand, you can point to all these examples, and she does so all around the world, of where there are communities and grassroots organizations that are really wresting control back over their food system. So she sort of lays out this argument that despite the setbacks we've had, that there is this way that there really is this revolutionary food movement that's emerging around the globe.
She's actually quite, you know, it's a very inspiring piece, and it's quite optimistic in a way at this moment when, you know, it's tempting to sort of wring our hands about how terrible everything is. So that's very striking, but not all of the respondents were quite as optimistic.
Right. Or I think my mother, and I like to do this as well, she likes to describe herself not as an optimist or pessimist, but not as either, in the sense that if you're optimistic or pessimistic, what you're essentially saying is you know what's going to happen in the future, and there's some hubris to that. What she likes to describe herself as a possibilist, Many of the things that she describes in her piece, if she had predicted them 40 years ago, she would have been considered completely naive. So the sense that we don't know what is possible. But you're right. Some of the respondents, we have Raj Patel, the author most recently of The Value of Nothing. We have Vandana Shiva, Eric Schlosser, Michael Pollan responding. And I think they all these respondents lay out different arguments about this question of, you know, are things getting better or worse? And, you know, I was really particularly struck by Eric Schlosser's piece, who points out that, of course, in order to talk about food, we have to embed that conversation in a much broader one about political economy, about the fate of working Americans. And he argues, and I think he's right, that the food movement has been stitching those conversations together, and we are doing so better and better.
And one point that Pollan makes is that the food movement has had a lot of success in the realm of the media and cultural influence, but less success in terms of real structural change in the food system. And you sort of see that, you know, and I think there is a sort of, you know, skepticism among some for good reason on the left of the food movement for being this sort of, you know, organic, very almost like inward-looking movement that's more about lifestyle than about political change. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think part of the reason why I think many people have that impression of the food movement, I wouldn't fault them for it. I think part of the reason why people have that impression is more the fault of the media coverage of the movement than what I've seen on the ground of the food movement in this country. And what I mean by that is, if you look at who've become kind of the spokespeople for the movement, you know, who are presented as sort of speaking for the movement, I don't think they represent the diversity of who really is embodying the movement on the ground that I've seen. But I think that that also Michael Pollan's point that he makes really well in his piece is that that he's absolutely right that we haven't seen the kind of policy changes that would need to be enacted in order to make access to sustainable food more possible for more people. And I think the reason for that has to do with how much influence on our political system some of the biggest food companies have.
Yeah, and sort of segueing into the rest of the issue, we have a piece about Walmart in the issue, which is partly about this effort led by the First Lady in the White House to do something about the problem they called food deserts, inner cities where there's lack of access to decent, fresh food. But this piece by Bridget Huber raises a lot of questions about having Walmart, this is a company that is famous for, you know, impoverishing its own workforce and depressing wages in, you know, wherever it moves. If, how is that going to come into inner cities and solve the problem, a problem which is a problem about poverty and, you know, deprivation at more than a problem of, like, access to groceries,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, here's where I feel like the mainstream media has not done us any favors. If you look at the coverage that this the Walmart moving into urban areas has gotten in a lot of the press has been, you know, really positive. Hey, they're going to step in. They're going to open these grocery stores. And as you point out, in this piece, Bridget really digs into the questions of, well, are they really solving, what's the problem that they're solving, and are they really solving it? And who is even defining what that problem is? And as she points out in her piece, that if you look at the wages that Walmart workers get, for instance, that they're substantially lower than the typical food retailer. If you look at the studies that show that Walmart moving into an area actually overall net decreases the number of jobs, I think she raises some good questions about, is Walmart going to be best positioned to help us address, again, those underlying causes of the food crisis, which are essentially a growing inequality in this country and people who can't afford to buy food, whether it's sustainable food or any kind of food.
Another thing that we do in this issue is we broaden the sort of definition of the food movement. It's usually most in this country talked about in domestic terms, and it's, we really look at what's happening globally. There's a piece about Zambia, a piece about Venezuela, where Hugo Chavez, for all his faults, mm-hmm. is doing some pretty interesting work. And then, Anna, you spoke with Olivier Deschutes, who is a pretty, you know, compelling voice at the UN.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was so glad to have had the chance to interview him for this issue. So he's the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, and I wonder how many of you listening have ever even heard of such a position at the United Nations. And yet globally, he has a really strong voice. It's a voice that we don't hear too often in the U.S., but the perspective that he brings is, again, this kind of broader perspective that the food crisis isn't really a crisis of productivity. It's not an agricultural crisis. It's really a political and economic crisis. And his work as in this role that he has at the United Nations is to help identify where there are solutions emerging, where there are efforts that are really successful in developing countries. And we talk about that a little bit in our interview together.
Great. Well, thanks, Anna, so much. Your work on the issue and this conversation.
Thank you.
Nation Conversations is a product of The Nation magazine and is available on iTunes. You can hear more podcasts at thenation.com/audio. Thanks for listening.